Hey, welcome to the Coaching Minds Podcast, the official podcast of Mental Training Plan. Joining us today, very special guest who was recommended, connection made by close friend of both of ours, Steve Siebel, who was actually on the show, episode number 91, talking about coaching the mental side of the game. Steve does a lot of what I do over on the East Coast, and he said, hey, there's this guy, his name's Brad. You guys got to have a conversation, and that was all he said. And sure enough, in our initial conversation, I was super excited about just the topic. Brad's the founder of School of Grit. He's got a book out. He works with adults. He's going to be expanding, working with youth also. Brad, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. It's a pleasure. It's an honor to be on, and so cool when a mutual friend can put us together. So shout out to Steve out there if he's listening.
Where I would love to start is the first chapter of your book is literally titled The Crucible. The Crucible event was something that we started doing when I was still coaching at Westfield. It was phenomenal. We loved the addition of that. We loved what kids got out of it. Kind of forced them to man up a little bit. Would love to just hear your experience, because I know you've kind of gone through this personally, and then also just sort of take us through, maybe introduce what is it and why is it important.
I chose to attend what I call a school of grit, and there's lots of schools of grit if you look at them online, they're everywhere. But a crucible to me is something that's going to push you, not just physically, but mentally, emotionally, right? We're gonna take you to a place you've probably never been before, so you can discover who you really are. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad, but at least you got a baseline and you know what to do. And we're gonna expose your weaknesses, and we're gonna practice those weaknesses afterwards. So that's my idea of Crucible. Love hearing that y'all did that as part of your football team. I'd love to learn more about that. Absolutely. But the Crucible I chose to go to was called Kokoro Camp. And that is put on by former Navy SEAL commander Mark Devine, Mark's mentor of mine. And he's been doing these camps now. I think he's on his 60th iteration of these camps. So a number of years. I went back in 2015. And why I chose to go was I just took stock of my own life. And I guess I have somewhat of a unique perspective. Life wasn't very hard for me. I'm just going to throw it out there. You know, born and raised in Indiana, oldest of four. Played sports, didn't have a hard time making friends. Parents still married, come from a very loving family. You know, we weren't rich, we weren't poor. I knew the difference between both. But I'm not saying I was born with a silver spoon by any means. But, you know, we didn't have to fight for food. I didn't have to fight for a roof over my head. And I'm just a proponent of bringing what I call purposeful adversity into your life, because that's what shapes you and forms you and prepares you for the battlefield of life. We're all dealing with it, right? Everybody you meet's fighting a battle that you know nothing about. So why not prepare for that? And a crucible is one way that you can prepare for it. So I chose to go to this camp that was put on by Navy SEALs, and it's modeled after, if you know anything about Navy SEAL training, it's regarded as some of the toughest training in the world. And there's a part inside of that training called Hell Week, where candidates are up for about a week with very little sleep, and they're pushed to the brink. So this was a 50-hour crucible. So it started on a Friday. You didn't know what time. And then it ended sometime on Sunday. But I think we ended up being up about 55 hours, zero sleep, minimal food. And man, did it push me to the core. So that's the oversight of it.
Love that. And so the, you know, kind of similarly, we put our players through something. Obviously it wasn't 50 hours, but the first day of two-a-days, you can't really practice in pads anyways. So we would go to this camp, and we would have, you could kind of consider it like a, I don't know, a bit of an obstacle course race, kind of a, you know, little bit of a tough mudder challenge, some Spartan race stuff mixed in there, but like everything from they had to get in a canoe and paddle, which, you know, doesn't really seem like that big of a deal. I was surprised at the number of kids, though, that we had that were in tears because it's like, I can't swim. I'm terrified of this. I don't want anything to do with this. They had to, you know, go through some muddy, nasty creeks. They had to carry a great big telephone pole. They had to, you know, throw a 50-pound weight down across this football field. They had to, you know, the whole course was like, I don't know, 3 miles long, 4 miles long. They had to go find clues that were hidden underneath rocks in a river. They had, you know, kids are losing shoes in the mud, in the muck. There was this hill that they had to climb that was, I mean, it was brutal. Like, guys are sliding down, falling into trees, scuffing their knees on rocks. Kids are, you know, eating a face full of dirt. They're having to figure out, how can we get our entire team across the line? How do we get our entire team up this hill? And so we put them in these challenging, uncomfortable situations, almost to the point where it was like, this is going to push a lot of these guys to this point of, can I even physically do this? And you know, there were obviously some guys that were much more athletic that a lot of these things weren't as difficult, but they also had to deal with, I can't just breeze through this on my own. I've got to bring everyone along with me. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, so we've got kind of this baseline of, you know, how you guys did it, or, you know, how we've done it. Let's dive deeper though into like why, and what do you get out of this, and what's the benefit on the other side?
So one of the big benefits of this was, when I went to the camp, I would say I was very selfish. It was about me. And that is one thing these types of crucibles can inspire, is true teamwork. And that is the idea of putting the person on your left, to your right, taking care of them first before yourself. And man, was that ingrained into us all weekend long, because we weren't going to make it. We just flat out weren't. The events were signed. They called them evolutions. The evolutions were set up in a way where it required true teamwork. Like, you're not going to pick a telephone pole up by yourself.
Right.
Well, maybe one person could, but now you're not going to get very many reps.
Right.
And you could tell when you're underneath that log, let's say, and you're doing log PT, you could tell when someone's not putting out. You know exactly who it is. It's actually pretty easy evolution if everybody's working hard. You know, if the pole weighs 300 pounds, and you got six people underneath it, well, that's about 50 pounds. Most people who are, you know, football players or whatever, they work out, they can probably handle that. But as soon as someone quits or decides to take it easy, not so much. And you could see that log shift, you know, front, back, side to side. So that's one of the big things I loved out of it, was just the true, you know, teamwork and just really the grit aspect of it, man. Just digging down deep and coming face to face with an obstacle or a scenario where you think it's impossible when they're telling you what you got to do, and then you end up doing it because the team together can do it. So that was critical. That was one of the biggest things I learned out there, was taking getting outside of your own head, you know, when the going gets tough, because everybody gets broken too. Let's just facts are facts. Everybody's breakable. If I tell you to go do air squats for the next 5 minutes, you're probably going to break at some point, right? It's not that hard to break someone. But when you do break, where does your mind go? And what are you looking at? And how are you tricking yourself into keep moving forward, keep making a little bit of progress? And that's a big one, was just concentrating on your buddy. Because that's, we all had, they call them swim buddies out there, but that was your partner. And wherever you went, they went with you. I don't care if it was to the bathroom. And if you ever got caught without them, you're going to pay the price, you know?
In the book, you were talking about preparing the mind, and it doesn't matter how physically fit you are, like you alluded to, you know, for some people that might be 10 pushups or 50 or 100 or 200, like at some point, you will break. At some point, these situations become so uncomfortable, so unbearable. You have to wrestle with, why am I doing this? Or, this hurts, this sucks, I want to quit. You said in the book, you got to control these thoughts and your emotions if you're to push through any type of adversity in life. As you're, you know, now on the other side of, you're not just going through this on your own, but now you're helping other people go through this. What are some of the ways that you teach, you know, that person who's in the middle of wrestling with, why am I doing this? This is awful. Where's the kind of that starting point for you with them?
I think you just nailed it. And it's asking that question of why are you here? Ask them, especially ask them during an event, during that period where, you know, you can tell it's a suck fest, right? They're practically crying or they're putting out, or you could tell facial expressions tell a lot, right? All the groans and stuff. Sometimes you pull them to the side if you need to, and just say, why are you doing this? See what they say. You know, is it intrinsically motivated or is it external? I'm doing it because my parents are making me do it. Okay. That's not a very good reason. I'm not saying you can't make it, but if it's intrinsically motivated, like, hey, I want to be the best version of myself that I can be so I can go on and play not only for my team, but maybe go play, you know, D1 ball, whatever you got. Okay. Now you're on to something, right? Cause that's going to drive you. And that's going to instill that discipline. I didn't say motivation, because motivation, it to me is crap. It comes and goes like the wind. Basically, I got tons of days I'm not motivated to get out of bed. Actually, today was one of them because my kids had a 2-hour delay. But it's important to instill that discipline, just to say nope, gotta get up. Right, small little wins throughout the day, and that's a big one. You know, just getting out of bed sometimes for people. So yeah, it's starting with why, and that's relatable to anything. Whether you're running a side hustle business, whether you're a coach, whatever, ask yourself. I try to say, ask yourself why 3 to 5 times, and that'll reveal like the real reason you're doing something. And it's a pretty good little practice. And then, likewise, if you can't answer that, well, maybe you need to reflect on it. Why is it that I'm having a hard time coming up with why I'm doing this? Or, you know, this is outside of this crucible piece, but maybe you got asked to do something and it doesn't make sense anymore, right? Doesn't fit. You've moved on. So maybe it's time to, I'm going to throw out the Q word. Maybe it's time to quit. Because quitting's not bad in some situations. I've quit a lot of things in life that were good for me. Relationships, all sorts of different things. And that's different than giving up, though. Because giving up is that's what you don't do, right? That's where you can answer that why. And you're so laser focused on this is exactly why I'm doing it. It means so much. It's like, I'm never going to give up on that. But I might quit things along the way in order to pivot 100%.
So, you know, talk to me a little bit about this word grit, because, you know, I was a teacher. I was in education when Angela Duckworth, you know, wrote the book that so many people use to define this word. It became a pretty buzzy word in the realm of education. Talk to me a little bit about maybe a quick definition of what is it? And then let's dive into why is it so important?
Let's do it. So Angela Duckworth, she's one of the people that got me rocking and rolling. So I know that book intimately. And when I was in a place in my life, so I'm 44 right now, I was about 34 at the time, I was struggling with answering those basic questions that come up internally. It's questions like, you know, what's my purpose? What am I here to do? You know, is this my career? Is this what I should be doing, or should I be doing other things? And I turned to the internet to help me answer that. And after a long time of reading blogs and stuff like that, I came across Angela's TED Talk. And if you haven't seen that TED Talk, it's incredible. It's only about 6 minutes. And she goes on to say that grit is the leading indicator and predictor of success in life. And she gives all these reasons why through all of her research and all these folks she's looked at, whether it was, you know, West Point candidates or people teaching math in inner cities, you know, you name it. What's going to keep someone in the game, so to speak? And grit came up. And grit, something can be grown. As she says, you can grow it from the inside out. You can grow it from the outside in. And her definition of grit is passion and perseverance for a long-term goal, which I think is great. I actually take it a step further. I actually have my own definition of grit. And that's the cool thing about grit is it means something different to everyone. So if you ask me, if I ask you, if you ask 5 other people, you're probably going to have Similar answers, but different words. And I've come up with this over the course of time. So I like to say grit is uncommon perseverance in the face of adversity, backed by a strong why to achieve a worthy goal. That's like a four-parter, and that's a mouthful, but it's uncommon perseverance. And what I mean there is effort. Because if you read her book, effort counts twice. You know, I'll take work, hard work over talent pretty much any day of the week, you know, in the face of adversity, because that's when it's going to show. You know, everybody wants to go for a run when it's 70 degrees outside, sun shining, you know, shirt, sun's out, guns out, right? But when it's cold, like it has been in Indiana, and it's zero and the windshield's negative, it's very easy not to get that workout in. Very easy to sleep in a little bit. So that's when it shows up, is when adversity sets in. Backed by a strong why, we just talked a little bit about that. You know, why are you doing anything? And to achieve a worthy goal, you know, you got to make sure your goals are lining up with where you think you're going in life. Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. And it's okay to pivot. Like I said, it's okay to quit things and move on to different things. It's perfectly okay, as long as it aligns with that mission. So that's my own definition of grit.
So as as I hear this as a parent, as a small business owner, as a coach, you know, the first thing that pops into my mind now is perfect. So now how do we do this? You know, we said grit can be grown. Give me some concrete examples of, you know, whether that's boardroom, football field, or, you know, my own living room, of how this can be grown. So maybe some concrete examples.
Yeah. So there's basically two buckets here. You can grow it from the inside out. You can grow it from the outside in. So I'll start with inside out. Inside out would be, to me, enlisting the help of a coach, a mentor, something like that, who's going to help you work on more of the mental game, right? The emotional side, because this isn't just physical, guys. Physical is a part of it. It's definitely a part of my own coaching program, having the physicality, and there's a reason for that. But as you look at a whole person, I actually like to divide them up into five different mountains. That's what I call them. You got physical, mental, emotional, intuition, and then your warrior spirit. And, you know, working on grit on the inside is really examining those different pieces. So a perfect example would be growing mental toughness, right? You hear your mental toughness all the time, right? It's a big, big buzzword. So I've got four ways I train that specifically. For your listeners out there. And these aren't rocket science, but I guarantee if you do them and you do them well, you will see a gradual increase in your grit and in your mental toughness. So the first is I want you to pay attention to your breath. As corny as that may sound, or if you think it's woo-woo, but seriously, pay attention to your breath. What are you doing? Next time you're in a boardroom or you're having a crucial conversation, I almost guarantee you're holding your breath when you get asked or put on the spot or something like that. And it's no different than in sports. When the clock starts winding down and, you know, that blood pressure rises and you're not playing loose anymore, you're stiffening up, check your breath. You probably got a little bit of shortness of breath. So just remember, take a deep breath in and out. There's all sorts of different breath exercises I teach, but that's the most basic one. Just a little tactical breathing, right? 2 seconds in, 2 seconds out. If you can control your psychology, if you can control your physiology, you can control your psychology, which is the next piece. So now that I'm breathing, I'm trying to gain control. I'm working on positivity, right? Trying to be as positive as I possibly can, and realizing that you know, it could always be worse, man. Someone's always got it worse. Even though something, you know, sucky's happening right now, there's a reason for it, and something good can come out of this. So, you know, you're breathing, you're staying positive, which are huge. Visualization is the next big one that I teach too. So this can be done pre-event, can be done post-event, can even be done during the event. But I'll start with pre-event. Say it's a football game, or say it's a big a board meeting, like you said. Maybe you're in sales and you're meeting with a big client. I want you to actually visualize yourself delivering your sales presentation and being successful. Because if you can visualize it, if you can see yourself doing it, then you're going to be able to do it for real when the time comes. And then last but not least is proper goal setting. So, you know, let's take football. Football's four quarters. Let's play quarter to quarter to quarter. Don't think about the whole game. You got to be right here at this play, right here. You know, I want your mind drifting off thinking about like what we're going to do in the third quarter if it's the first quarter. You got to be present right here. This next play, all we need are these next yards. That's no different than running a marathon. And, you know, you're on mile, let's say 20, and you're struggling, you're hurting, and just concentrating on that next stop sign I'm running to, that next street, that next group I can see ahead of me. I'm just trying to get just a little bit farther. Same thing with your goals. If you got a dream of opening up your own business, go do it. But make actionable steps. You know, the first step could just be going to get your LLC, do the paperwork. Boom, you got that done. What's my next thing? Breaking off those big goals into smaller chunks, essentially. So that's the big four of mental toughness that I teach to help increase grit from the inside out. It's breath, positivity, visualization, goal setting. And then likewise, growing grit from the outside in, that's the fun. That's also the fun part too. That's attending a crucible experience. That's putting yourself into areas where you're nervous, you're a little bit scared to do it, but it's for good reason. Okay. And it doesn't have to be physical. I just prefer physical because I think it's the easiest thing to do. It'll immediately get you right there. And hit you, adversity will hit you. And it's like, you know, what do I do when I can't do another rep or I'm breaking? But it doesn't have to be that. It could be public speaking. I know a lot of people have a fear of public speaking or podcasting or whatever. Make yourself do it. The more you do it, the better you're going
to get. I love that. As you're kind of going through, you know, the crucible, you're going through Kokoro school, as you're experiencing these things and you're kind of having this aha moment where it's like, this is awesome. This is changing my life. This is incredible. And, you know, you had alluded to, you couldn't just do it on your own. You were going to have to bring others with you. As you think about, you know, because the highly motivated guys that just kind of get it, that's, I think, as a coach, it's easier to coach that group. What about the kid who's in tears with mud on his face that just wants to hang it up and wants to quit on the side of this hill, and he's not sure that he has what it takes, and his teammates are pissed because they're not going to win this event because they can't get his butt up this hill? How do you interact with maybe that group of athletes? How do you coach that group of athletes? What's the balance between I come in with tough love and I say, let's go, we got to toughen up and we got to keep pushing, versus, you know, at what point do you wrap your arm around the kid and say, hey, you know, we got this, we're going to be all right. What's that balance look like? Maybe for those athletes that we're coaching that are falling behind and in that pool of doubt still.
I think the more those, let's call them A-plus athletes, I think the more that they can be the quote unquote coach and help that player out versus the actual coach, the better off the team's going to be. A coach is absolutely vital in delivering the message. But the best teams that I find are when your best players are not only talented, but they work hard and they're completely bought in and they realize, hey, it's not really about me. It's really about the team. And the way the whole team's going to lift itself up is if we're all doing better. So if that's how I would do, I would challenge, and I have challenged those A players to be the leader, be the conduit between the coach and maybe those other players that are hurting. But here's the deal. You're a team, and I've been in those scenarios, absolutely, back at the Kokoro camp and back at other places where, you know, you've got someone on your team that's not putting out. Well, maybe you help them out. Maybe you carry them a little bit, figure out a way to help get them over the hump, so to speak. So, and then those kids, especially that are struggling, you know, two things come up there. One is having the conversation that, dude, everybody's scared of something. And there's lots of things I'm not good at. Okay. And maybe this is just one of them running up this hill for whatever reason. You're just not good at it. They begin to think like they're no good. And then they begin to think like, you know, they're going to bring the team all the way down. So I think it's a good opportunity sometimes to pull them to the side and have that conversation. I'm not breathing down their neck. Usually it's more of a mentoring relationship and just having a quick conversation about fear, because everybody's scared of something. And here's the cool thing, man, courage can't exist without fear. If you get that dichotomy. So what I said there was courage can't exist without fear. And there's an example I always use, and that's my wife. She's scared to death of snakes. So we were walking a trail the other day, actually a couple years ago, kids were younger, and a snake popped by. She freaks out, like literally runs away, leaves me there with the kids. I'm not really scared of snakes. I don't care for them, but you know, I'll shoot away. I asked my kids, I was like, hey, did dad show courage there? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, I would say no, because I'm not really scared of it. It's no big deal for me to do that. You know, reverse that situation though. If my wife shoot that snake away because she's deathly afraid, like, is she showing courage? And they're like, yeah, absolutely. I'm like, you're right. Why is that? Because she's scared. She's got fear. So if you believe in that dichotomy of fear and courage, and you believe that courage can't exist without fear, then this is also true. Those who are the most fearful have the opportunity to be the most courageous. And that especially hits hard to kids, I find. And so why I'm saying that is I would try to pull those kids aside who are really struggling and try to have that conversation. If you have enough time, that is, to have that conversation about courage and fear. And, you know, just, you're never out of the fight, man. Just keep pushing yourself forward. And we had an event, I'm reminded of, where we had to scale this mountain all night. It was, like 20 plus miles, and we had rucksacks on that weighed about 40 pounds a piece. We had our makeshift weapons, which were PVC pipe with sand. They were about eight pounds. And we had a couple people on our team. We had a team of six, and they were really struggling. So I happened to be one of the stronger ones in the group for this event, because I had my events that I was not so strong at. And what we did was, as a team, we took those two members, we took their rucksacks and weapons. So now I have two rucks on. I have two weapons. I have double the load, and all the other person has to do is just walk. And what that did was, it enabled them to kind of catch a second wind. They saw how hard we were working. And once we got close to the top of the mountain, they grabbed their gear and finished the ruck, which is cool. And afterwards, the SEALs brought us alongside just our group, because they could see us struggling, and they gave us a vote, and they said, hey, do you want your players on your team, or do you want me to kick them out of here because they're slowing you down? I was reflecting, because I didn't know how to answer it. It's the first time anyone ever asked me that. It was the first time I've been in that situation. Someone else was like, I want them out of here. I want new players. And the SEAL said, you are not a good teammate. That is the easiest answer you could say, is get them out of here. I want someone new. He's like, remember, there are no bad teams. There's only bad leaders. He's like, be a better leader. And I was like, holy crap, man, that really sank in, dude. Yeah. So yeah, that was a good one.
I love that. We had, you know, thinking back to like the first year that we did that event, you know, we tried to set it up so that you had to, there were different skill sets that were good for different events, right? So like, you know, the big offensive lineman who's really struggling with the run, with some of the cardio stuff, with getting up this hill, it was like, if we could just get them to not quit, if we could just get the teammates to carry them up the stinking hill, to find some way to just keep going. I remember multiple times where it was like, you know, we got to this event where they had to push something big and heavy, and it, all of a sudden, all these skinny little wide receivers and DBs are real glad that big boy's with them, because, you know, he's got some oomph behind him, and he's going to be able to help them out a whole lot. And I remember in those moments seeing like this light bulb come on with the little skinny guys who are finally realizing, oh shoot, I can't do this on my own. But also, you know, some of these bigger guys that are thinking, all right, I can contribute. I still have value. I'm, you know, I've got this. They need me. As long as I don't quit and I keep pushing, we're going to be able to make this. And I, you know, last week's episode, we had Jake Gilbert on, who was talking about where, you know, the time that he realized the culture has really sunk in was when the backups were preaching it, was when the C team kids were preaching it, was when that sophomore that you're like, well, I'm not really sure he's going to, you know, ever really be on the field. All of a sudden, he's saying, these are the cultural expectations of this program. This is how we do things. We're not quitting. It doesn't matter. That's not an option. When it has permeated the entire culture to the point where everybody is now preaching this, you know, that's when you can look around as a coach and be like, all right, we're doing this the right way. So I was so glad, you know, I was curious of your insight, and I think that those totally line up. I'm curious, the next question that we wrestled with a little bit as coaches was, we wanted to completely eradicate leading by example. And I was like, that was something where, you know, we had some teams, we had some players where the guys, the studs on the team, the A-plus players, like you call them, they were all in. They were doing the speed work. They were doing the strength work. They were getting bigger, faster, stronger. We knew we could count on them. But it was almost like they were just that person out at the front of the marathon who's just blowing past everybody, and they weren't bringing someone with them. And so, yes, they were setting a good example, and yes, they were doing all the right things, but that wasn't good enough. And we allowing them to just, quote, lead by example was almost a cop-out because they didn't have to bring someone with them. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, that balance of, you know, obviously there's some value in leading by example. Obviously there's some value in, you know, the players that are at the top doing things the right way. But I guess the point is like, but we need more. What is that you saw in your own experience?
Yeah, I think part of that, and I love that. Like, I love how you worded that, try to eradicate leading by example, because I didn't know where you were going at first. But when you explained it, I was like, I know exactly where you're going now. I think a couple of things. One is, that's why during this crucible that I went to, you had swim buddies. You were partnered up with somebody. It was based on height. That's the only thing that went through it. First thing we did when we showed up, height line, count off. That made your teams, and that made who your swim buddy was. And you were graded. You know, it wasn't just about how awesome you are. It's about how awesome your buddy is too. So what that does is that accounts that accountability for someone other than just yourself, because it's going to be now in this particular case, it could be a two-man score instead of a one, you know, because like you said, when it's one, it can't, those A players, like they're already wired that way. They're wanting to be awesome, but can they make other people rise up and train and break through? So that's one way that camp accomplished that. And then the other one was being a part of a boat crew, was what they were referred to as. And boat crews were typically between 6 and 8 people. And let's just say it pays to be a winner and it really, really sucks to be a loser. Yeah. So that was a little bit of negative reinforcement, let's just say, because cool. Like, that's probably the canoe example, I'm guessing, because I can just picture people in there A, they can't swim, so they're already freaked out.
Right.
But B, like, the only way you win a canoe race is everybody's in unison.
Right.
So otherwise, you're just going to go around in a circle, it seems like. So
or tip over and grab a hold of the thing and try to swim it across the muddy lake. Man. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So those types of events, evolutions, whatever you want to call them, that help really instill the like the micro, like we're all part of the big team, but then there's little teams inside of the big team, you know, and just the whole, it's so true, man. You're only as good as your weakest link. I mean, you really are. You will be exposed at some point, and that's okay. Everybody's got a weak link, but believe me, even your stud A-plus players, somewhere they're weak. Maybe it's not on the physical side. Maybe it's on the emotional side. They're dealing with some sort of trauma. You had no idea, you know, but going, that's what I love about these crucibles and just the intimacy of really, really cool teams is, man, when you can get down and have that layer of conversation, holy smokes. Now we're, this is much bigger than just the game. This is about life and what you're going to go on to do after football or whatever your sport is, you name it, what kind of a person you're going to be. How are you going to serve others? How are you going to lift them up? How are you going to make the world better?
Yeah. And this is, you know, this is getting, like you said, deep into where real meaningful change actually happens. And, you know, I'll be honest, like I remember the first time that Coach Gilbert said, hey, we're not going to practice football on the first day of two-a-days. The first time we're allowed to, you know, work with them, we've got this many hours that we're allowed to put them through stuff and they have to have this much rest time and we can do this. And it was like, we were literally going to have them canoe and lift things and run up the side of a hill and all of this. And I remember on the front end of it thinking, okay. I mean, like, you know, when I was in college, I played for Chris Creighton and we had to do, it was called the 12-minute run. And, you know, my position group had to run 2 miles in 12 minutes. And that was, you know, until I hiked the Grand Canyon, the most difficult thing I had ever done in my entire life. And I remember, like, in the fourth quarter, we wouldn't hold up the four like a lot of teams do. We would hold up three fingers on each hand to remind us of, you know, the time that we had put in during these 6 a.m. workouts and the work that we had put into the point where we could make this 12-minute run. And, you know, so having these deeper motivating driving forces, I think, is what really starts to separate good programs from great programs. And I love that you brought up courage can't exist without fear. One of the things I talk about, you know, with the athletes I work with one-on-one is like, look, all these tools that I'm helping you with mental toughness, like you can't practice them without adversity. You can't try and, you know, really truly test your confidence until you're in that moment where you have to decide, do I have what it takes? Talk to us maybe a little bit about creating some of that, not just in a crucible event, but, you know, maybe throughout the season, maybe in the off season, just making difficult things part of your culture, because courage can't exist without fear, just like mental toughness can't exist without adversity.
Yeah, I think, like you said, it's practice. You know, you can read about all these things. I got a bunch of books on my bookshelf, but ask me how many of those books I've ever implemented. Maybe less than 1%. I mean, that's just the facts. And that's when it's going to show up. And that's why, in my definition of grit, uncommon perseverance in the face of adversity, that's when you're going to want to use it. It's have you practiced it enough to where you can access it at a subconscious level, or at least think about what you're doing and then go into, you know, maintaining your breath, positivity, all that good stuff? Or is it as soon as you know what hits the fan? Sorry, I don't know if you can cuss on this podcast, so I'm purposely not, because kids are listening, but I can. You know, when it hits the fan, let's say, do you just spaz out? Do you just completely go blind? You just forget and you let fear, like the fear wolf, take over. And that initial hit of fear is so, like, it's okay. That's what I'm trying to preach. Like, that is okay. That's why I'm a proponent of just doing something that sucks every day And there's lots of ways you can do it. And it doesn't have to be a crucial. I'm not talking about that. I mean, like little things. It could be as simple as waking up 30 minutes earlier a day and reading. Maybe you hate to read, but you know it's going to make you better. All right, cool. Let's do that. We're gonna start with that. I know ice baths and plunges have become quite popular here in the last few years. And I'm sure there's some scientific reasons why. You know why I like cold?
Why is that?
Because the first thing that goes is your breath.
Yeah.
You start hypoventilating. And that goes back to what I'm talking about. Get control of your breath. Once you can control that, you're okay. So that's why I love using those as part of training. Is it like that's one of the easiest ways to train breath control. We're going to get you super cold and uncomfortable. And you're going to learn how to unlock, breath control. We're going to do it right now. So that's an easy way. Yeah. I'm just a proponent of that, doing things that suck, but you know, that are good for you. You know, I'm not talking about putting yourself in harm's way, you could be in situations where, yeah, maybe, but, it's overall good for you. Definitely. I mean, I love what you said there. These are all tools, right? And there's tons of tools out there. Get a backpack full of tools. So pick the ones that work for you too, because they're not all going to work. They don't all work for me.
Right.
But then really hold on to what works. And that comes from experimenting and putting yourself in those situations. And that's why typically I start with the physical mountain, which is working out. Whatever your jam is, I don't care. Whether it's walking, yoga, CrossFit, powerlifting, rucking, biking, whatever. Just do something. But to me, like that's the easiest one to train, because you can see immediate results, whether that's increased strength, losing weight, whatever your goal is, right? Back to that why am I doing this? And then I love working out and getting myself like HIIT training, like getting to that point of, man, I can't hardly breathe. All I can concentrate is getting that one more rep. That's where you want to be. And that's when the mental game really starts for me. And that's when, everybody should have a mantra, like a word or a phrase you tell yourself just to kind of get yourself going, that whole positivity piece. And mine is, I usually say good, like now the workout's actually beginning. Like when I look around, everybody else is tired. I'm like, all right, this is where I accelerate. I'm not gonna decrease. I'm gonna put my foot on the throttle. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna break some people.
Love that. Yeah, we had an activity one time. We were replacing some negative thoughts, and it was like, what's the situation? And for one of the kids, he was brutally honest. He was like, 6 a.m. workouts, they suck. He's telling us as the football coaches, and it's like, well, yeah, I know. And then it's like, what's the negative thought that pops into your mind? And he's like, not this again. My bed's so comfortable. Why the heck am I doing this? Is this really going to do anything? Am I getting anything out of this? And then, having them work through like, all right, so what are those reminders that you need to give yourself? And he lists out, all right, maybe here's why we're going to do this and blah, blah, blah. And so his thing that he came up with was time to grind. And love so, it. He, I'll be honest, like at first it was almost, he used it almost so intentionally, just, it almost came off as like disrespectful. Like, you're going to make me do this, fine. Then I'm going to go over the top and I'm going to throw this back in your face. Time to grind. And just saying it over and over and over and over to the point where it's like, this is all right. This is getting a little bit obnoxious. And before you know it, like, it catches on. And before you know it, like, all of a sudden these, guys start saying this and teammates start saying this, and you start seeing some high fives and some chest bumps and some, pushing people around. And it's like, even in the midst of him, whether he truly was whether the motivation behind it was, I'm trying to be obnoxious or not, didn't matter. Like, the end result was, it completely changed the environment. It completely changed the mood when people started saying that. And, that's something that I love about self-talk. It's like, even if you got to fake it till you feel it, like at the front end of it, like it's worth it. You need to be doing this.
I love that. That should be a t-shirt. Yeah. Like the team t-shirt that year. Time to grind.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So I know, you know, before the show, we were talking a little bit about what you do now, and then also some goals that you've got, you know, in the future with your own coaching journey. Talk to us just a little bit about, you know, what you're up to and some vision for the future.
You know, when I graduated Kokoro Camp, so this is something, I mean, I trained, I lived it, I breathed it, I slept it for 6 months, man. Like there was no going back. Like I had visually, I saw myself graduating. In fact, I told my wife, I was like, I'm going to make it. She thought I was nuts. Everybody I told that I was doing this, thought I was nuts. Like, why are you doing this? And I told my wife the night before, I was like, because there's no contact, right? And this was actually the first time I think I wouldn't have talked to my wife for a whole weekend, believe it or not. I told her, I was like, you're not going to hear from me. And if you do, it's bad news. So meaning like I'm making it or I'm coming back on my shield, so to speak. Graduated. I mean, we're elated, right? We started with a class of 50, graduated 25. So we lost half our class. Mind you, these are all studs. To go to this program, there's a minimum standard you have to hit of push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, time mile run. So, you know, why did we lose half the class? It's the 6 inches between your ears. That's why. That's why it's so important. That's why we're spending so much time talking about the mental game here, not just in football, but in life. But my mentor, Mark Devine, he posed a question to the class and it haunted me, man, for a long time. And it was just two words, two simple words. He said, what's next? I'm like, what's next, man? This is it for me, right? I have reached the mountaintop. What else is there? Well, for those who have reached the mountaintop, there's a little bit of depression that can sit in, you know, the arrival fallacy. I don't have another goal. I don't have another mission to go to. So I was kind of tumbling tumbleweed a little bit. Like I thought, okay, maybe a Spartan race or some obstacle course races, stuff like that could help fill that void. And those are cool, but nothing compared, nothing stacked up to my experience at the Crucible. And one day I stumbled upon Mark's teachings and, he's got a really cool program called Unbeatable Mind that really digs into a lot of stuff we've been talking about. I said, you know, I think that's my next engagement is I want to become certified as a coach. So it was a year-long program. I did it actually during COVID and they don't just graduate anyone. You have to be selected to graduate, which is super cool. So I got certified in this program and I began coaching adults. Actually, I typically work with men. It just seems to be my niche. So for the last several years, I have online groups that I coach over video. I like to meet early in the morning. So we meet usually at 6 a.m. Calls are usually on Wednesdays right now. So I've got a pretty cool call team and people call in from all over the U.S. And man, we just do life together. Like it's a lot of what we're talking about right now, but we get super granular on, you know, some of the emotional stuff that's going on in their lives and, you know, what their passions are, what are they trying to do? Of course, there's physical exercises we all try to accomplish together. Like for the month of January, we were doing, you know, Jocko Willink.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. Yeah. We're doing his reset, January okay. reset. Nice. So no booze, you know, drinking lots of water, doing 100 burpees a day, all sorts of little things, but that's been a lot of fun. Holds me accountable too, which is why I love it. Cause I don't just talk and teach. I do this alongside with my clients. Like that's important for me. So that's what I'm doing now and where I hope to go. And this just kind of recently happened. So my kids are still pretty young. My daughter just turned 13, Hallie, and my son Brody, he's 10. They're winter babies. But they're involved in sports and I love coaching. So I've began becoming an assistant coach and getting more involved with sports and community. And just, I love it. And what I see a need for, Ben, and this is something that I'm working on. This is my dream is to create a crucible, if you will, or events, but for kids. Cause to me, it's like, that's what it's all about is bringing up this next generation. And you talk to parents all the time, I'm sure, as do I. And there's lots of pressures out there. There's pressures that we didn't have to deal with, thank God. But these are real. And the more we can get kids to open up and work on becoming a little bit grittier, I think the better off we're all going to be, man. Because they're going to be taking care of us one day. You know, that's the way this cycle goes. So that's my dream, is to start hosting events for kids. And yeah, I can't wait. So
love that.
We're starting that now.
So real quick, just give the listeners quick overview. If they're wanting to get in touch with you, learn more about you, what's the best way to do that?
Easiest way would just be go to my website. It's schoolofgrit.org, not .com. So it's .org. Someone owns.com. Wasn't going to pay for it. So go check it out. It's got all my contact information there. Or just drop me an email. It's brad@schoolofgrit.org.
Awesome. Well, Brad, thank you so much. I've thoroughly enjoyed our time together. Really appreciate you joining us on the show today.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate you, man. And I look forward to meeting you in person here one day.
Absolutely. Would love to. Hey, thanks for tuning in today. If you found value in today's episode, we ask you to please share it with a friend, with a fellow coach that might benefit from our discussions. If you want to learn more about taking your team's mental game to the next level, visit mtp.academy. You can explore the program that we've got. You can train your entire team throughout the year. Super affordable, very customizable, and the best part, you'll have direct access to me. I will help you come up with the calendar. I'll help you with implementation, and I'm there for any questions you've got along the way. As always, thank you so much for joining in, for listening, and until next time, make your plan and put it to work.